Chapter 34. I woke up. That surprised me in itself. I woke up to see the moon still high overhead and to feel Murphy's hand on my forehead. "Come on, Harry," she whispered. "Don't do this to me." I blinked my eyes a few times and whispered, "You shot me, Murph. I can't believe you shot me." She blinked her eyes at me to hold back tears. "You stupid jerk," she said, her voice gentle. "You should have got down when I told you to."
"I was busy."
She glanced over her shoulder at McFinn's silent, still form. "Yeah, I saw after." She turned back to me, looking a little past me, focused elsewhere.
"It's all right," I said. "I forgive you." I thought it was very generous of me, appropriate to the last moments of a man's life.
Murphy blinked at me and then stiffened.
"You what?" "Forgive you, Murph, for shooting me, your job and all. I understand."
Murphy's eyes narrowed dangerously. "You think," she said, her face twisted with disgust as she spattered for a moment and then spat to one side. She began again. "You think that I thought you were one of the bad guys still and shot you because you wouldn't surrender?" I felt too weak and dizzy to argue.
"Hey, it's understandable. Don't worry about it," I shivered.
"I'm so cold."
"We're all cold, moron," Murphy snapped. "A front came through about the same time they threw us in that freaking pit. Must be below 40 already, and we're wet besides. Sit up, El Cid."
I blinked at her.
What?
"Sit up, dummy," Murphy said. "Look behind you." I did sit up, and it didn't hurt much worse than it had earlier this evening, surprising me again. I looked behind me. Denton was there. He had a fallen branch in one hand, like a club. His eyes were wide and staring and savage, his face pale with loss of blood. There was a neat hole in his forehead, right in the middle. I blinked at the body for a moment.
"But how did he—"
"I shot him, you jerk. He came running up behind you, just as I came back from giving first aid to that naked woman, Tara West. I was shaking too hard to have a safe shot with you standing, and I didn't know the Loop Guru was coming up behind me." She stood up.
"I can't believe this," she said, and turned to walk away.
"You thought I shot you."
Murph, I protested. "Murph, give me a break. I mean, I thought—"
She snorted at me over her shoulder. She snorts well for someone with a cute little button of a nose.
"You didn't think, Dresden," flipping her hair back from her eyes. "Dramatic death scene, noble sacrifice, right? Totally misunderstood."
"Ha! I understand you, buddy. You're such a pompous, arrogant, pretentious, chauvinistic, hopelessly old-fashioned, stupidly pig-headed—" Murphy went on in graphic detail and at great length about me as she walked away to call the police and an ambulance, and it was music to my ears. I lay back on the grass, tired but smiling. Things were all right between us. The police had one hell of a time sorting out the mess at Marconi's place. I made sure to collect all the wolf belts. Murphy helped me. We burned them, right there, in a stinking fire made of branches. It was too hard for me to throw them in. Murph did it for me. She understands things, sometimes, that I couldn't ever explain to her. Later, I went with Murph to Carmichael's funeral. She went with me to Kim Delaney's. Those are the kind of things friends do for each other. Mr. Hendricks, as it turns out, had worn his Kevlar under the black fatigues. They put him next to me in the ambulance that night, when I had finally left the scene. They'd bared his chest, and it was a solid mass of purple bruises, so that we were a matched set. He glowered at me in silence, but he breathed steadily through the oxygen mask on his face. I felt absurdly cheered when I saw him alive. All things considered, can you blame me? Marconi got arrested on general principles, but nothing stuck. Though everything had happened on his property, injuries on the FBI agents indicated that they had all done one another in or been killed by an animal, except for Denton, of course. None of the police officers there possessed a warrant, etc., etc. I hear his lawyers had him out in less than 3 hours. Marconi called me a few days later and said, "You owe me your life, Mr. Dresden. Are you sure we can't talk business?" "The way I see it, John,"
I told him. You owe me your life. After all, even if you'd cut yourself free, you'd have just fallen down into the pit and gotten eaten up with the rest of us. I figure you thought your highest chances of survival were in freeing me, the wizard who deals with this kind of thing, to handle it. Of course, Marconi said, with a note of disappointment in his voice. I just hope you hadn't realized it. Nevertheless, Harry, don't call me Harry, I said, and hung up on him. Susan filmed the death of the Loup Garou from less than 50 yards away with a pretty good zoom lens and special light-sensitive film. The light from my amulet illuminated the scene rather dramatically without really showing many details. You can only see my back, and it looks like I'm swinging a glow stick around and then throwing it at the monster, which can be seen in only shadowy detail as something large and furry. At the point when I released the spell, there's a burst of static about a second long, where the magic messed up Susan's camera, even from far away. In the film, the static clears, and you can see Murphy shoot Denton off my back just before he brains me with his club. Then she spins around like Rambo, jumps out of the way of the leaping furry something or other, and empties the rest of the clip into the thing out of reflex. Murph and me both know the bullets didn't hurt it at all, that it was just a reflexive gesture on her part, but I don't need the attention. She was quite the hero, according to the camera, and that was fine with me. Susan's film went on the morning news, and it was shown for about 2 days afterwards, exclusively on WGN Channel 9, and it impressed Chicago a lot. The film made Murphy popular enough with voters that a bunch of city councilmen went to bat for her, and the Internal Affairs investigation got called off. She carries a little bit more clout than she did before. The politicians down at City Hall paid for a real name tag on her office door. The weird thing was that the film just vanished after 2 days. No one knew what happened to it, but the film technician in the room with the film and the only exclusive WGN Channel 9 videotape disappeared too, leaving only a few scattered in low-quality copies. A couple of days later, some experts spoke up claiming that the tape had to be a fake, and decrying it as a simple hoax perpetrated by a tabloid. Some people just can't deal with the thought of the supernatural being real. Federal government is like that, a lot. But I'm thinking that if anyone in the government did believe, they would just as soon not have had the proof of existence of werewolves and the instability of a local FBI agent showing at 5, 6, and 10. The film's disappearance didn't stop Susan from getting a promotion at the Arcane, a big raise, and a guest slot on the Larry King show, plus a few other places. She looked good doing it, too, and made people think. She's getting her column syndicated. Maybe in a few hundred years, people might actually be willing to consider what is real in the world with an open mind. But I doubt it. I didn't call Susan for a while, after she'd seen me so far gone into being a monster that I might as well have been one. She didn't pressure me, and kept her presence known. She'd send me flowers sometimes, or have a pizza delivered to my office when I was working late. Hell of a girl. Tara was badly injured, but recovered thanks to her own reversion to human form and Murphy's quick first aid. She asked me to meet her at Wolf Lake Park a few weeks later, and when I showed up, she was there in just a long black cloak. I wish to tell you that what you did was necessary. And I wish to tell you goodbye, she said, and slipped the cloak off. She was naked, with a few new wrinkled scars. Goodbye. Where will you go? I asked. She tilted those odd amber eyes at me. I have family, she said. I have not seen them in a long time. I will return to them now. Maybe you'll call sometime? Her eyes sparkled, and she smiled at me, a little sadly. No, Harry Dresden, this is not the way of my kind. Come to the Great Mountains in the northwest one winter. Perhaps I will be there. And then she shimmered into the shape of a great timber wolf and vanished into the sunset. All those people shape-shifting into wolves, and I had never once considered the possibility of a wolf shape-shifting into a person. I picked up Tara's cloak, musing, and took it home with me, as a reminder to try to keep my mind even more open to the realms of possibility. The Alphas decided that I was the greatest thing since sliced bread, which isn't exactly the most thrilling thing in the world for me. They asked me to a camp out with them, which I reluctantly attended, where all dozen-odd young people swore friendship and loyalty to me, and where I spent a lot of time blinking and trying to say nothing. They were just itching for me to lead them in some meaningful crusade against evil. Hell, I was having trouble just paying the bills. When I took some time to think about all that had happened, I couldn't help but think that the last several months had been a little too crazy for coincidence. First, a power-drunk warlock had appeared out of nowhere, and I'd had to duke it out with him in his stronghold before he murdered me outright. And then Denton and his people showed up with the enchanted wolf belts and raise hell. I never found out who was behind the warlock who showed me up the previous spring. Black wizards just don't grow up like toadstools, you know. Someone has to teach them complicated things like summoning demons, ritual magic, and cliched villain dialogue. Who'd been the teacher? And Denton and company had showed up 6 months later. Someone had provided them with those belts. Someone had warned Denton that I was dangerous and that I, or someone like me, from the council would go after them. And by telling him that, they had pointed him at me like a gun, determined to kill me. I'm not much of a believer in coincidence. Could it have been one of my enemies on the White Council? One of the beings of the Never-Never who had come to hate me? I was on the list of a number of nasty things for one reason or another. You know what? I told Mister one night in front of our fire. Maybe I've finally gone around the bend, but I think someone might be trying to kill me. Mister looked up at me, his feline features filled with a sort of supreme lack of concern, and rolled over so I could rub his tummy. I did, pensive and comfortable before the fire, and thought about who it might be. And then I thought that I might be getting a little stir-crazy. I hadn't gone anywhere but to work and back home for a couple of weeks. Too much work and no play makes Harry a paranoid boy. I reached for the phone and started spinning the dial to Susan's number. Mister batted at my hand approvingly. Or maybe I'm just too stupid to get out of trouble's way, huh? Mister rumbled a deep, affirmative purr in his chest, and I settled back to ask Susan over and enjoyed the warmth of the fire.